Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way, on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Hands out there for everybody who got knocked on their butt by a guy named Wooga
over the weekend. No? Nobody else? Nobody other than me? But that's a good thing if that's the case. Because Wooga was not small. And it was quite the collision. But I'm fine. Back home. Obviously disappointing, heartbreaking end of the Longhorn basketball season. A lot to discuss there. Uplifting, exhilarating end of the weekend. Entire weekend, for that matter, for Longhorn baseball. We've got a lot to get to on the program this morning. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, where we're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig White. Thanks so much for joining us. Jeff Howell is about to be in the air to fly back. He's flying back this morning from Kansas City, so he'll be out today, but he'll be back with us tomorrow. And our producer, Cameron Parker, is here, and he had a most extremely busy weekend. A lot of golf. I just texted you at one point to see what was going on, and there you were, hanging out at Dell Match Play. Had a good time out there?
Yeah, last one. Very sad to see it leave. Yeah. Me and Aaron Hogan were talking about it before the show. But it was a great week, and Austin Country Club put on an excellent show, as they usually do.
Yeah, they did a wonderful job from what everybody has told me. And you hope that because of the way that that event was run during its run here, even though it doesn't necessarily have to be a match play event, you'd love to see the PGA Tour return to Austin, be a great market and a great place for it. But you know how those things go with the schedule. So we'll find out. We'll see where that is. And that was one part of the weekend. Obviously, the NCAA tournament was a big part of the weekend. I did not check on this, but I feel pretty safe and secure in saying that I'm sure out of the more than, I think, 30 million brackets submitted across the country. Those are just the ones that are publicized. More than that, probably, that not a single bracket has a pairing of Florida Atlantic against San Diego State on one side of the Final Four and Miami against UConn on the other side of the Final Four. I feel pretty confident in saying that nobody had that in their bracket. And you think of all the millions and millions of brackets done, but I don't think anybody picked that one.
You know, it's a weird year when a lot of people are winning their bracket pools by not having a single Final Four pick. I won mine, yeah. And I didn't have a single final. I had Kansas State and Texas, and they both fell down yesterday.
One game shy of reaching the Final Four. Would have been something if those two had. I was talking with Joni James Lehman of the Big 12 Conference, because the Big 12 was the host of that particular region. You know, normally you'll see it if it's like where the NCAA tournament is. It's either a host institution or a host conference, like in Des Moines, first and second round. The host was Drake University. But in Kansas City, it was the Big 12 Conference that was the host, supplying a lot of the manpower and the essentials and things like that. And that's what goes into the hosting part of it. And she and I were talking, and she said she was really hoping, this was before the game, so she was really hoping that that he would have had half of the Final Four field be from the Big 12 Conference, but none from the Big 12 in there. So anyway, somebody on the Specs text line, and so, oh, it's, let's see. Yeah, there are apparently four brackets. So, and then somebody else said, counting all of the automated brackets, 37 total. So that's in the over 30 wow. million brackets, 37 total. So congratulations. Somebody else had said on B&E this morning at 6 had that particular bracket as well. But I've seen that, yeah, 37 out of 35 million brackets on ESPN. And so, hey, congratulations to those who did that. You know, the cynic in you wants to say that had to be like by random. You know, did they have their dog, you know, point to which one, or did they have their 2-year-old child go ahead and do it? If somebody had that much college basketball acumen, I salute you. Way to go. So there you go. Somebody said, Cam, I was at the softball game, so not watching on television. Some thought the cat was back on as analyst. Do you know? Well, Cam wasn't doing the softball games. I know he had done them the week before. He normally doesn't do it. Cameron was filling in for Andrew Haynes the week prior. But Andrew was back on the call. I don't know.
Cat for LHN, I'm guessing?
Yeah. I mean, she just gave birth to a child there. But I'll tell you what, we'll get the answer on that. And big weekend for Longhorn softball in sweeping out Texas Tech as well as Longhorn baseball. I do agree with Jim from Lago Vista. All in all, it has been a great tournament. Going into the tournament, everybody said, this is going to be a great tournament. It's going to be highly unpredictable. That's exactly how it turned out to be. How it's turned out to this point to be was wildly unpredictable, I guess, would be you'd be pretty safe in saying it is wildly unpredictable. And toward that end, we'll jump right in with some audio from this. It was by the way, there was a couple other questions. Somebody had asked me, Chan had said, how long do Marcus, Timmy, CB, and Rice get to clean out their locker and no longer have access to the basketball locker room? I think they take as long as they want. There's no rush on any of that sort of thing. I don't think there's going to be any issue on that. Saw all those guys last night. Obviously, I was on the flight back with them, and I'll get to some more about that. Jeff, you said, who is Harry Carey Light? That's Tom Barfield. He did play-by-play for Baylor baseball for 15 years. So we brought Tom in to do some games when we had conflicts, when Roger couldn't be there and I couldn't be there. And he's been around college baseball a long, long time. He got pretty excited. I would, too, on a walk-off home. We'll hear that call. So we'll do that. Somebody said, yes, Cat was on LHN. I saw and heard her on TV. That's outstanding. So there we go. Anyway, and somebody else said, hey, I know Cam filled in for Andrew, did a super job. That's why I directed the softball question to him. Yeah. That's cool. Yes. On LHN, Cam was out at golf, this weekend, but Andrew Haynes was back on the call. Our man up in Belton says, are DeSue and Cunningham able to come back for one more season? Brock Cunningham has already said he is coming back. He's in a graduate advertising program, and counting a redshirt year he took right on the front end of his collegiate career, that was the NIT championship season of 2019, and then everybody got that COVID year of eligibility, so it'll be a 6-year run for Brock, but he has used his time wisely, already graduated with a 4-year degree, a bachelor's degree, and is in the master's program working in advertising right now and loves it. So, yes, he's going to come back. So we'll look forward to that. And Dylan DeSue has not made his decision yet. He does have a year of eligibility if he chooses to use it. Has not yet. He said he would sit down with his family and would talk about it. So we'll see. Dave, the display Sooner, says, hey, much watch TV next week in UT softball against the Sooners in Norman. Correction, not in Norman. Not in Norman. They're playing it at the Hall of Fame Stadium in Oklahoma City. Andrew Haynes told me that last night. How about that? So they're playing that, I guess, at Don Porter ASA Hall of Fame Stadium. Anyway, they're playing at the softball Hall of Fame complex next weekend, which is interesting. So and somebody else said, one of the funnest weekends in a long time on the 40, from the baseball softball tailgate to start Saturday morning watching softball and baseball take down Tech. Somebody text me in and let me know how the block party was. If you were at the block party there on Comal Street, if you took part in that between baseball and softball, where they had the Comal Street blocked off there, and it made it easier to do because they're doing work. And I've had a lot of people ask me this about that construction that's going on past McCombs Field. That's graduate student housing that's being constructed there. So graduate student housing there, astride Comal Street, and that's what that is. So they had construction barriers up, so they had a block party. So if you were there, you know, good for you. Ice Cream Man says, so you're saying Brock's on the Perry Ellis plan. He's on the Jordan Shipley plan, you know? So anyway, and listen to the radio broadcast in real time. It sounded like you agreed that we got hosed on the Brock call is what you're saying. Somebody said they didn't block the street. They had the construction barriers up the other day for the Tuesday night game, so I guess they removed that there for the block party, and somebody else said it was a good time, had a good time on it. So I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear the block party went off very, very well. It was on the lawn by the tennis courts. Good. I'm hoping they enjoyed all of that. With regard to the Brock Cunningham call, if you look at the replays and you look at the still shots, it's hard to envision it being called the way it ultimately was called, with Cunningham going up. And like I said, it looked like it was, in fact, the way that it was originally called. And I don't know, and I've heard people say they changed the call. And I don't think that's quite the proper phraseology. It was too calls. Now, I will say the call that was made against Norchad Omier was the arm went up from might have been Patrick Adams who his arm went up on that. But it was Brent Hampton who called Brock Cunningham for undercutting Omier. And it was a big moment, no doubt about it. Omier would have fouled out of the ball game. They would have walked the other way. It was a loose ball foul. Cunningham would have had two free throws to try to put the Longhorns up because it was 79-all with a minute to go in the game. Now, Ronnie Terry and the players will tell you that one specific call did not lose in the game. They point to a lot of things that happen, especially with a lot of downhill straight line drives that Miami had down the stretch to come back. There were a ton of foul calls, obviously, and the Longhorns missed some key shots and had some turnovers. All of it added up to it. Were they banged up? Yes, they were. They didn't have Dylan Dessou. Yes. Marcus Carr, they got that Charlie horse right in the quad, and that didn't hurt. And Sir Jabari Rice was hobbled. I saw him limping off the floor when he came off at one point. Is that knee was bothering him. Somebody said it was a dirty play by Cunningham. You could not be more incorrect. It was a dirty play. He's boxing out. That's not a dirty play when you're boxing out to get a rebound. He doesn't see Omier coming over the back. Now, you can make the argument one way or the other where there's a foul. Dirty play? No. Absolutely 100% not dirty play. Again, there were two different calls. One that said the foul was Omier, and one that said that it was backing into him. So, yeah, not a dirty play. Going to definitely disagree with you. Somebody said, was that Craig that the Miami player crashed into the press table and spilled the drink and computer? I noticed Marcus came over and dapped up whoever it happened to. Yeah, that was me. That's what I meant at the start. And I said, raise your hand if you'd If anybody else got knocked on their butt by a guy named Wooga, was Wooga Poplar, came over, and I could see it happening in front of me. It's almost like, you know, when sometimes, and this is not compared to having a car wreck, because trust me, I've been in car wrecks. But it's one of those deals where you start to see it happen in slow motion. You could see him coming, and he's going to crash the table full on coming to get the ball. It's a risk you take. When it happened, I've had it happen to me a few times in the past. I can remember for sure when I was the analyst, when Bill Schoening was doing play-by-play, I think it was our first year together or second year, 92-93 or 93-94. They're playing Houston, and there was a guard for the Cougars named Lloyd Wiles. I always remember this. He came right over the table and knocked me pins over, you know, the whole thing. And that one hurt. It actually kind of bruised my hip a little bit. There was a game at UCLA in 99, a women's game. And Edwina Brown in the 99-2000 season, who was the National Player of the Year that year for Texas, came racing over the table, landed right in my lap when that happened. So it's happened. But Poplar came over to try to save the ball, crashes into the table. I get knocked, you know. It's more head. It's more heels over head, not head over heels, because I was going backward. And I didn't even really have that much water in the cup. I was down pretty low, but what was left spilled everywhere. And everybody kind of jumped. Cedric Golden, the Austin American Statesman, was helping me up. Eddie Horn was kind of trying to help me up. David Garrett, our producer, our engineer, was mopping up the water with the scarf he had with him. And then there were other things. So there were a lot of people that helped out, and I appreciated that. But I was okay. And Marcus Carr did come over, and he was laughing and gave me a fist bump there for that. So that was happening right in the time that it was at. Somebody said it was a dirty place. Moving backwards, you don't box out like that. He was boxing out. It was not a dirty play. You're flat dead wrong. You're wrong. That's not a dirty play. A dirty play would be shoving somebody, tripping somebody. Much of it's not a dirty play. If you back into somebody, that's not a dirty play. It might be a foul. It's not a dirty play, though. So, anyway, like I said, it was called. If it was such a dirty play, it would have been called both a foul on one side and a foul on the other side. So, and it was a difference on the two fouls, and Brent Hampton's call was the one that obviously they stuck with on the floor. So. But it's not a dirty play. So anyway, that's, you know, that's how it is. And folks will have a different take on it, and that's fine. When Brock is going backwards, he's not aware that the guy is there behind me. He's backpedaling there to get himself set to get a rebound. And then Omer comes over the top of him. So you judge it how you want to judge it. But one thing it's not, is it's not a dirty play.
That's how coaches teach you how to box out.
Yeah, come on, people. It's not a dirty play. Was it? Can you call it a foul? Yep, you can. Dirty? No. So, anyway, somebody else said Cunningham's just boxing out like every other player does. So, anyway, so that's the deal. Somebody said, did you hold the call through the fall, or could the radio audience tell you were knocked over, said Gus in the Bronx. The answer is yes and yes. I kept going. The headset was knocked a bit askew. I think what came through, I wasn't sent that particular moment as a highlight because it wasn't really a highlight. But I think it sounded like you'd heard the headset go askew and it was like that. Remember the old Eddie Murphy stand-up act when he talks about when you had the elderly aunt, he says, who falls down the steps and it takes him forever to fall down the steps. Oh, Lord God, Jesus, help me, please. My shoe. That's what it was like when it was just boom, plowing. You heard this. But I kept on talking. It stayed with it and got the headset back properly affixed and went on from there. So, yeah. That's somebody else said, dirty play texter has never played basketball. Somebody else, nothing dirty about what Brock did at all. That guy is an idiot. He had a body on him. The guy jumps. Brock fell back. Fundamental box out. So somebody else, I saw a still shot of the Brock play. It's not a dirty play. Whoever's saying it is smoking that devil's lettuce. I don't necessarily mean say that person is on anything, right? They're just incorrect. It's not correct to say it's a dirty play. It's not a dirty play. That's and somebody said the foul called on the clean block. I think they were talking about the one at Tyrese Hunter. So there's always going to be a lot of conversation about officiating, especially at that level of the tournament, a high level of the tournament. Somebody said two different calls on the same play. What's the deciding factor? It's a big call, no doubt. Oh, female listener number 17 remembers. It was Aunt Bunny who fell down there. Mashu! Yeah, that one. I was in college when that album came out. Here's some of the way it went down in terms of the conversations about this. And it was, as I mentioned, difficult time. But first of all, here's Brock Cunningham talking about how he and his teammates let things get away from him down the stretch of the basketball game.
Borderline gave it away. That's a quality team with some elite players, but we had the game in our hands and it slipped out. You know, I've been here 5 years, and to see where the program came from when I stepped on campus in 2018 to where it is now is a huge sense of pride. But you know, there's only one team happy at the end of the day.
Yeah, Miami was at, and I know it wasn't lost on a lot of people to see Brock Cunningham standing there down along the baseline and just watching the celebration. He was actually inside the security ropes that you have there to keep, you know, fans from rushing the court and things like that. He was inside of it, but he was just standing there down at the end of the floor watching what was going on. Timmy Allen with thoughts after the game about how much his teammates have meant to him and how much his coaches meant to him. First of all, talking about his teammates and how important they have been to him throughout all of this.
As far as these guys, they're just so fun to be around, and knowing that it's coming to an end, and all these guys like Christian and Timmy, Jabari, all these guys just taught me so much, and it just comes to an end, and it hurts, but you know, life goes on, and I couldn't be more proud of this team, no matter how far we came, even if we would have lost first round. Like, I could be more proud of this team and everything we've accomplished with all the adversity we faced.
And that's my bad. It was actually Sir Jabari Rice who said that, because he mentioned Timmy and the other guys. Now, this is Timmy talking about how much being around Rodney Terry has meant to the program and to himself.
I just want to tell y'all how much I love RT. Like, I'm hurt because we didn't win for RT. And we didn't win for us, but, like, for RT, he's family. He was family before Beard got out of here. He was family when I got here, and he's done an outstanding job. And his love that he's shown us has taken us further than the X's and O's. So I think that's something that's really important.
Yeah, Timmy Allen with some retrospective there. And then a couple of things from the post-game news conference. One, the opening statement from Rodney Terry talking about the end of the ride for his team.
I like to just start by saying I'm just so proud of this group that I got a chance and was blessed to work with this year. These guys here, more than any group I've worked with in 32 years of coaching, have really embodied, you know, in terms of staying the course and being a team. These guys were incredible teammates all year. They were so unselfish as a team, and they gave us everything they had. They really did. Every day they came in with a smile on their face, ready to go to work. You know, we learned a lot of tough lessons through some losses and through wins. But, man, I can't say enough how proud I am of this group and what they've been able to do this season. They accomplished a lot. We had guys that came back and were on a mission to accomplish some great things, and we're right on the brink of being right where we wanted to be to close out this season. We'll give Miami a lot of credit. They continued to play, and they played well down the stretch, and they made some plays down the stretch to win the ball game.
That was at the start of the press conference, and this is probably some sound you have heard. It tells you not only how Rodney Terry felt about his team and about these guys, but also about what everything this group went through together. When you think back to December and what was said back in December and the suspension of Chris Beard and ultimately his firing in January and how this team had to pull it together, the day the announcement came down that he was suspended, but that they were playing Rice there on that Monday game, and just seeing it shoot around the looks on the faces of those guys, and some of them in tears and stunned and not sure where it was going to go. And since then, we've heard the veterans like Marcus Carr and Timmy Allen and Jabari Rice and Christian Bishop and Brock Cunningham saying that they were not going to let it ruin, crash, destroy, or define their season, that they were going to go through it. And Rodney had praised them all along about it. So with everything they went through and the ride they had down the stretch to finish second place in the Big 12 Conference, to beat Kansas not once but twice in 1 week decisively, both times, winning a Big 12 Conference tournament championship, winning the two games in Des Moines, winning the Sweet 16 game, and then coming within a minute of going to the Final Four, you can understand the emotion. When it's all said and done, the conclusion that was in Rodney Terry's voice when he was asked how badly does he want to coach this basketball team going forward.
I haven't really had a whole lot of time to give a lot of thought to that. To be honest, I've been so wrapped up and invested in my team. I mean, again, I love these guys. And not only will I just love these guys for the time I got a chance to coach them, I'm going to love them for the rest of their lives. I'll be at their weddings. I'll be with them, you know, talking to those guys when they have their firstborn. And, you know, it was all about this team, man. And I enjoyed every single day of this journey with this group. And I'm going to really miss working with this group. So it was never about me. It was always about these guys. And I love these guys.
Yeah, that was the emotion that he felt. Afterwards, about a half an hour later, and was being interviewed by a group of reporters as well out in the hallway. And safe to say probably that RT had probably had a chance to take more of a deep breath coming out of that press conference and being more composed afterwards. Still in all, was talking about the difficulty of what it's going to be like not to see these guys on an everyday basis and to go through the things that they've been through for the past several months together.
It's going to be really hard because in 2 years, those guys made a commitment to come back when they didn't have to come back. And, you know, they wanted to try to do something that hadn't been done at this university. And I'm just really proud and happy for them in terms of the kind of year that they got a chance to have this year in terms of going deep into March. And, you know, last year we lost in the second round and got a chance to get to this second weekend with the hope of trying to get to a Final Four. And I'm just, again, so proud of what they were able to do. And they left their footprints on this program. And, you know, people will be talking about these guys for years to come.
Yeah. And then I will tell you that on the flight home, Roddy was doing what he has done all season long, and that is to made his way up and down the aisle and thanked people for being there and being a part of it. Not only his players, but the support staff, everybody who was on that plane. And he was, you know, like he always is, very affable about it, you know, consoling where he needed to be and congratulating where he chose to be as well. And then one more bit, and this is from Sir Jabari Rice. And again, this speaks to how these guys have felt about one another and how this, because without this type of thing, there's no way they could have overcome what they did, dealt with what they had to deal with, and make the run that they had to make. And Jabari had some thoughts on it.
I love these guys. Like, this is my favorite team.
I couldn't ask for nobody else to be here. From the younger guys, Dylan, Terrio, those are two of my favorite guys, to Tyrese, my brother, to Marcus, Timmy. The things that we've been through, CB, Dylan, I don't want to leave. I just didn't want to leave right now. I just love this program. Winning feels good. So, I mean, when you're winning and you're bonding, like, as much as we did, it's just something that you don't want to end. But it happened to end tonight. And that's all I can say. The part that I'm going to miss the most is the guys. Basketball is easy. That's cake. But just building a bond with different people, that's something you won't get all the time.
Basketball is as easy as cake, but building that relationship with those guys, the bond with those guys, is something you don't get all the time. Yeah, it's a good way to think about it. No matter what our station or occupation is in life, we talk about relationships being so important. And it happens in team sports as well, as we know. All right, so there's some basketball. So I'm going to get to a lot of your comments on the Specs text line at 337-3776. Feel free to text in if you have a difference of opinion on the fouls and this and that. And like I said, I understand it being called a foul on Brock Cunningham. It was a bang-bang play on that, and one official saw it as a foul on Norchad Omier, which would have been his fifth. The other saw it as a foul on Brock Cunningham. I get that. Where I would obviously take issue if somebody said it was a dirty play. My brother texted into me and said, if Brock had only taken one step back with Ormey on his back, then Omier would have received the foul because he definitely went over his back. They will call it every time now if you take more than a step back on a box out play. Agree with all that. And then he goes on and says, that wasn't a dirty play because of the intention he was trying to get out from under him. He said, your texter is calling it that way because NBA players do use that move intentionally to jack with people. So sometimes you'll see it called dirty because of the usual hard-nosed or dirty players in the NBA used it more than once, like Dennis Rodman used to do a lot. I agree with that. But in the moment of him trying to make a play to get to the rebound, it wasn't a dirty play. But I do get why it was called a foul on that. And then other people weighing in and saying, it's not dirty. It's not dirty. The Colonel, Craig Flowers, is finally, you'll get a sarcastic photo from the coach of a cart on the cart path. What you won't see is the cart in front of the picture on the grass. Talking about the block party on all of that. So, anyway, somebody said, who makes the final decision? Well, you saw that they came together, the three of them. And interestingly enough, the crew chief in that moment is the one who made the call against Omier. But they went with Brent Hampton's call. Usually when the officials get together, they'll say, I had this. And then one may ask the other, are you sure you feel convicted about it? And if he says yes, then they'll go ahead and go with it. So that's why that is. So anyway, so there you go. All right, coming up, I will get to more of your text. I promise on that. Also, we would be doing the Longhorn baseball team a disservice if we didn't have the recap of that. How about them not only beating Texas Tech, but sweeping them all three games, sweeping the formerly 14th ranked Red Raiders of Texas Tech. Longhorns now have won 14 in a row. They're 18-7 on top of the Big 12 conference standings. We'll recap that. We do have Inconceivable coming up this hour, and we'll get to plenty of your texts as well, and recap the weekend, get kind of the Dell match play recap from Cam as well. Also, Cam will have a Flex 30 update for us coming up next hour. We have our Longhorn Notebook. That's up next when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Light the Tower with Craig Way and Jeff Howe.
Two and out, the pitch. Swung on and driven deep to left. This one's going. This one's going. This one is gone. Walk it off, Tex. Get off this. Garrett Gilmad with a walk-off home run that may still be in flight. Oh my goodness gracious! What a ball by Gilmad! And Texas sweeps the Red Raiders. And they won their 14th in a row on a walk-off home run by Garrett Gilmad. And it was a majestic shot over the left field wall. Oh, goodness gracious.
Here was the walk-off home run by Garrett Gilmad. Texas sweeping Texas Tech. Beat them in back-to-back walk-offs. A wild pitch on Saturday. And then yesterday, Texas had an 8-3 lead. Tech scored 48, one in the ninth to tie it, and then in the bottom of the ninth with the walk-off home run. So Texas with the win, which brings us to our Longhorn notebook for this hour. And that includes the conversation that Ty Harrington, who was working the broadcast yesterday on AM 1260, had after the game. Ty and David Pierce having a laugh or two down on the field in between the conversation on the post-game interview.
Longhorn notebook.
I see a grin on your face now. All right, sweep. The last six outs in conference is in the conference. The Sunday game is always tough. Wait a minute, I got to back up. Congratulations on winning. Congratulations on your second consecutive walk-off. Congratulations on 14 in a row. And so, congratulations.
Man, that's a lot of congratulations. I appreciate that. It's about our team. They just finding ways to win games. Well, again, we weren't that good in the bullpen, but we did enough. And just keep competing. We were competing. It was a great team win. Huge for Garrett to get a 2-0 right there and drive the baseball.
Let's start with pitching, because we're going to end with the offense side of it. Let's start with the pitching today with Hurley going out. In your assessment of your pitchers on the mound today.
Well, Zeke, he was effectively wild and just, you know, kind of pitching off the plate and getting some outs and a little behind and then attacking. But his stuff just does so much. And so I don't think he gave up a hit until the fourth, but just commanding the baseball. But I just like the way our guys just continue to fight. I mean, out of the pen, it was a little bit of a struggle, but we had to piece it together, and Boogie was outstanding at the end.
Let's go to the offense, because obviously the homers today, the long ball for you guys were huge. You could have drawn a little circle around Peyton Powell's three balls that he hit today, and he, as you know better than anybody, is seeing the baseball about as good as anybody.
Yeah, that was impressive. I thought our work this morning was outstanding. Our batting practice was staying in the middle of the field, working on the inner third of the baseball, and, you know, Peyton sees it well. Put some really good swings on it, and you're right. He hit two out, and another one, their kid Hester makes a great play. So, yeah, I like where he is. I like where our offense is. Just competing and grinding out at bats was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, you got two freshmen that come up with homers today as well.
Yeah, Ryland's been good in that 9-0. That's why we stuck with him today. He's seeing the ball well. Jake, really good adjustments in his approach this morning, and it paid off for us.
Garrett Gilmad, he's got to feel pretty good. And obviously, he was standing here to hit this, to hit a walk-off home run on a series sweep, but for the first time in an orange and white uniform, it's got to be a special moment for him.
Yeah, we're so fortunate to have him and Charlie from USC and come in and be a part of our culture, part of this team. And, you know, the kid's a grinder. He really is, and he works his tail off behind the plate. And for him to have that success, I'm just really proud of him. You know, sometimes you got to say it only takes one swing, and he hit into two ground ball double plays today, but big time at the end. That's really a nice job of him sticking with his at-bats.
You said something yesterday when we were walking off the field after we turned off the microphone about, man, I just love the way these guys are competing. They are embracing the idea of competing, and because of it, they're finding ways to win. today's another example of it.
Yeah, I mean, we have JT on his own, lays down a pull drag, and then steals a bag and scores. We've got defense playing really well, communicating well, making the routine plays. And then offensively, you know, you can see our patience. We're not chasing a lot. We're making adjustments to different types of pitchers. Guys that want us to chase the breaking ball down did a nice job of getting it elevated and driving some baseballs. And just a tremendous weekend. Great fan base this weekend. Just so excited for our team to end this homestand on a 14-game winning streak. And I would say that's a pretty good homestand, wouldn't you?
I would concur. I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but I can tell you, I'm going to add that one up and tell you a big yes on that. And, Coach, congratulations on a sweep. You're 3-0 in the conference. You got to say something about it. Now, Tuesday we're playing who?
I don't know. I think they're what are they called? The Aggies or something? Yeah, it's always a big game. You know, you'd almost rather play them in between non-conference, but you start conference and, you know, both teams are in the same position. But we go over there. It'll be crazy Tuesday night.
It'll be fun. As always, when Texas and A&M get together, it's always special. Congratulations. Catch your breath. Get ready for Tuesday and go get them.
Thanks, Ty. I appreciate you.
Yeah, there was the conversation after the game, and you know, big moment, big game, big series over the weekend. Because let's be honest, in that 14-game homestand, the first 11 games, when you talk about the teams that they were playing, it was like, okay, these are teams that, quite frankly, Texas should beat, that were going to be down in the RPI playing Manhattan and New Orleans. And midweek teams like Incarnate Word, you know, doing that thing, Sam Houston, so Mercer. All of that was part of that 14-game homestand. And David Pierce didn't pull any punches, saying those were games that we should win. And it's weird to say we should be 11-0 after the first 11 games of a 14-game homestand, but they were. Then comes in a team that had just taken 2 out of 3 from a really good Oklahoma State ball club that was sitting on top of the Big 12 conference standings, and the Longhorns wind up winning all 3 games. So they're in first place today in the conference standings. I'll tell you what else it does, too. You talk about getting an RPI boost, which is still a major tool of the baseball NCAA Tournament Selection Committee. Texas, going into the homestand, had an RPI in the 200s, and right now they're at 22. That's what doing it. And the wins over Texas Tech really obviously gave it a you might say a turbocharged boost with those 3 wins. Now they go on the road. Starting tomorrow night with Texas A&M, it'll be an angry group of Aggies. Of course, they get fired up to play Texas. It doesn't matter what the records are and all that kind of stuff. But they come off being swept on the road by a really good Tennessee ball club. So that's going to be quite the challenge going over the Bluebell Park tomorrow night. Then it's up to Stillwater. The argument can be made that the two most difficult series for Texas in Big 12 play are the first two. Tech at home, Oklahoma State on the road. They still have to go to Fort Worth later in the year and play at TCU. You know, so there's still challenges to come on down the road. Somebody asked on the Specs text line, I wonder who might start Tuesday night against the Aggies. I think it's going to be a bullpen game. It has been in the past. I think it probably will be again. It could be LeBaron Johnson starting for 2-3 innings, depending on he pitched on Saturday but didn't pitch yesterday. Did a little bit out of the pen on Saturday, so it's possible. Our man in Belton asked, when did Barfield start doing Texas baseball games? Been hearing him for a while, but always heard him on the Waco station since I live in Belton. He's fun to listen to and get so excited. He's been helping us, I think, 4 years now, and just has been – really good, a good plug-in compliment to our broadcast when I can't be there due to the overlap with men's and women's basketball, and Roger, who did Friday and Saturday's game, and Roger wants it available Sunday, and Tom has helped us out a lot during this on the run by the men's and women's basketball teams, and we appreciate that. I think he's scheduled to do another game with us later on this season, so thanks to him for helping us out. All right. Up next, we'll get to Inconceivable. Let me get to a couple other texts, because I promised you I would do that. Somebody said, I could see that call talking about the Brock Cunningham foul go either way. Yeah, or say, if you can see that call go either way, Craig, then I'll temper my rage a little. Great season for the team. Yeah, I could see it going either way. I get it. It's difficult from a Texas perspective, but I could see that. Absolutely. I took issue with the person who said it was a dirty play. It wasn't a dirty play. It was a foul, for sure, the way it was called. If you're going to – if you know, you're going to make the call against Brock Cunningham, you call a foul, but not a dirty play. Somebody says, is there audio available, you getting run over by the Miami player? If so, I think you need to add some bleeps to it for the unnecessary censorship of Craig Way. We'll try to find if we can, maybe I can get it to Rod and Harge and Patrick and let them work their magic on it, because Rod likes to do that unnecessary censorship of my calls that make it sound like I'm cursing full-blown blue language when, in fact, that's not the case at all. But a well-placed bleep out here and there can make – it's amazing what your mind can do with it. And I've always got a big kick out of it. I thought it was pretty funny as well. Somebody else, Brock was blocking out exactly as taught, especially against a bigger player. If Amir was going straight up and not up over in the back, the rest of the play likely doesn't unfold the way that it did. And that's why I say there's folks – who are going to look at it differently. Somebody else said it seems like a 50-50 call, certainly not dirty. And someone else saying refs just called it tighter in the second half. Texas had a chance to end it. The scoring drought was brutal. Hell of a season, though, with or without all of the drama this season. So, anyway, so there's some other ones. Someone else, I can see the call going either way, but my problem is the call being overturned. And again, I don't know that it was completely overturned. What the official's arm came up one, and then the other one came from the other side, and I don't know if you could see that as well. It wasn't, hey, this was definitely the call. No, I had it this way. Okay, we're going to overturn it. I don't think it's that. They came together pretty quickly to discuss which official had one call and which official had the other call, and they decided to go with Brent Hampton's call on that. So there you go. All right. Up next, we'll bring you this morning's edition of Inconceivable when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Craig Way and Jeff Howe, Light the Tower.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Here's what we got for you on Inconceivable. First of all, a couple of airborne-oriented things. Southwest Flight was on its way from Las Vegas to, I want to make sure I got this right. Well, it doesn't say where it was going. Yeah, it is. I guess Columbus, Ohio. But Southwest Airlines had just taken off from, this happened late last week, I had just taken off from Las Vegas, and they were in the air, and one of the pilots required medical attention. So there were recordings, obviously, and it said a member of the flight crew can be heard saying the pilot had stomach pain before they fainted or became incapacitated. So the pilot came back after about a minute, said, someone says in the archive recording, and went to the back of the plane and was treated. So who's flying the plane? Fortunately, a credentialed pilot from another airline.
Wow.
Just happened to be a passenger on the plane. And so he goes, well, let me go in there. So that pilot entered the flight deck, and he helped with the radio communication while the second Southwest pilot flew the plane back to Las Vegas. The flight was on its way to Columbus, Ohio, ended up landing about 8 o'clock in the morning. Boy, you talk about a red-eye flight. Woo! After landing in Las Vegas, an alternate crew reportedly flew to Columbus. No update immediately given on the pilot's condition or the medical issue. The airline representative added, quote, "We commend the crew for their professionalism and appreciate our customers' patience and understanding regarding the situation." Pilots are trained to fly solo, and cases like these, had the off-duty pilot not been aboard the Southwest flight, a flight attendant could have stepped into the flight deck to assist.
Craig, we actually have some audio from that flight here.
Oh, yeah? Let's hear this.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, it's happened. But fortunately, there was just a pilot from another airline on there. I wonder if he had to, like, check with him, you know, his dude with Delta and say, hey, is it okay for me to hop on board here and
Fly this?
Yeah.
Does he get paid for that?
Yeah. Am I going to get a little bonus? And who's doing the paying on this? Speaking of Delta, Saturday night, they're going down or up the coast from Los Angeles to Seattle. And plane taxis pulls back from the gate, pushback from the gate. They're getting ready to taxi out. And then one of the passengers decided, yeah, I'm not for this flight. I need to get off this flight. But instead of saying that, which I don't know what kind of ruckus it would have caused, the passenger simply opened one of the plane's doors and slid down the slide. Pulled it out. Slide goes down. Whoop! So Delta Flight 1714. Took place about 10:40 in the morning local time. This was on Saturday, while the plane was stationary at L.A. International. So they had not quite pushed back yet. They were, it said prepared for takeoff. Boeing 737. No, wrong. They had stopped. They were on the runway holding to taxi for takeoff when the passenger exited the aircraft after activating the emergency exit slide. Sorry, I got a thing. Passenger was detained by the Delta staff and then arrested by local law enforcement. The FAA said, quote, customers are being reaccommodated on a new aircraft, and we apologize for the inconvenience and delay in their travel plans. So,
want to hear why they had to leave so briskly.
Yeah. Did he leave the water running on in the kitchen or something?
What airport was it? Did it say?
L.A. LAX. And they're going to Seattle. And they pushed back from the gate, rolled out to the runway, and were in a pause moment there, like you would be at a major airport, waiting, whatever, third in line, fourth in line, whatever it is, take off. And the guy decides, not for me. Let's just pull out the door and roll down the emergency slide. Yeah, you're going to have to explain that to the judge. On that, saw some viral video of a college baseball game that happened over the weekend. Austin Peay was playing Liberty. Now, did you hear about this game?
I did not.
Okay. Liberty's up 8-5 in the third inning. Not exactly your garden variety pitcher's duel. And Roland Fanning is the first-year head coach at Austin Peay. He got pretty upset with the way it was being called. First of all, the Liberty pitcher, Nathan Keeter, hit a home run in the first inning, and then he celebrated toward the Austin Peay dugout. So there's some of that going on. So that caught the ire of Coach Fanning and the governors from Austin Peay. So then he comes up for his next at bat, and they throw right at him. And he's almost hit by the pitch. Umpires got together very quickly and decided it was deliberate. Pitcher, catcher, head coach, all, you're out of here.
Wow.
So they eject him. So he comes out to argue it with the umpire, and he goes, oh, hold on, wait a second. I'm thirsty here. He goes back and gets a 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew, and he's standing there arguing with, hold on a second. You know, and he's, I'm all hopped up on Mountain Dew. So, yeah, he's just chugging a 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew while he's arguing with the umpire.
Yeah, in between F-bombs with the umpire, he's just taking swigs out of the Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
That's a 2-liter bottle, too. It's not like a little cup.
No,
it's,
I mean, he is killing it. And he pulls it down, and, you know, he's probably saying, look, did you see how that guy was showing up our dugout after he hit a home run? I'm like, yeah, I also saw how you instructed your pitcher to throw at him, too. So, yeah, you gave the signal to the catcher. The catcher tells the pitcher to throw, so you're all three culpable. Therefore, you're all out of here. Hold on. Let me finish my Mountain Dew. So, it's classic. Finally, we have an update on Ralphie the Demon Dog. Remember we had the story 2-3 weeks ago about this dog that had been returned not once, not twice, but thrice. Three times returned to a shelter.
This is Lady Gaga's dog or a different dog?
No.
Okay.
This is a French bulldog. And he had been returned three times because they called him, the New York Animal Shelter described him as a fire-breathing demon. they talked about because he specifically, that the shelter specified that Ralphie should go to a family without other dogs. They said through training, he might be able to get over his reactivity around other dogs. Also, bit of a biter, you know, aggressive. Well, now he has a new home. Third time, actually make it the fourth time the charm for Ralphie. Made headlines after that deal, but the Niagara SPCA said in a Facebook post on Friday that they received more than 700 applications to adopt the adorable.
700?
700 applications to adopt the adorable but troublesome French bulldog. They finally honed in on Ralphie's perfect adopter, a man named Jason, who wears Halloween masks. No. A man named Jason, who trains dogs professionally for the Department of Energy in Tennessee. And this guy's got a pack of other dogs. There's another French bulldog, a dachshund, a German shepherd. The shelter originally specified Ralphie should go to a family without other dogs, but they said through training he'd be able to get past all of that and that Jason would provide him with structure and give him an outlet for all that Frenchy energy, wrote the shelter. He dedicates his life to dogs, and that's what makes him a perfect match for Ralphie. He's described as a unicorn adopter. Someone on the Specs text line says, it's because he's not English, the French bulldog. No. Ralphie has a new home, and we're all glad for him for that. All right, second hour. We're already into it now, but we'll continue. More on the end of the Longhorn basketball team. Looks like the contract deal is going to be done for Rodney Terry. Should have an announcement probably in the next day or so. He'll be offered the job full-time at the University of Texas. Good news there. We'll talk some other topics as well. Coming up here in this second hour of Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital right here on your Horn app and at hornfm.com.